You're listening to Zen Crossing, where spirituality meets everyday life, with your host, Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center.
Today we'll be talking about living with cancer on the spiritual path. My guest today is Genko Kathy Blackman. Genko is an Osho in the Rinzai Zen tradition. After 30 years of Zen training, she's currently a student at Nalanda Bodhi, a practice community in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, and she also partners with me at the Puget Sound Zen Center. Genko is a longtime volunteer with Buddhist inmates at Monroe Correctional Complex and King County Jail, as well as Bailey Boucher House, a local hospice with a day program for clients living with HIV and AIDS. She also is qualified as a teacher of Japanese tea ceremony and is an avid gardener. Genko and I have been leading retreats together for 4 or 5 years now, and we're also a part of a Zen teacher peer group that has meant a lot to, I think, to all of us. Genko, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for asking me.
Genko, can you tell our audience about your recent diagnosis of cancer and the treatment that you're receiving?
I was diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer, stage 3C ovarian cancer, at the end of January, which now seems actually quite a long time ago, and have been through an extensive surgery, and I'm now halfway through chemotherapy.
Mm. How has your life changed since you got that diagnosis?
Well, it basically flips upside down when you have a diagnosis like that, because your priorities really have to shift towards dealing with the disease itself. So all the many activities that I was involved in, I had to stop. I had to find someone to cover as many as I could and take on a role, which I'm really not very good at, which is being cared for as opposed to being a caretaker.
Yeah.
So it was quite a change.
And with all that change, how have you been practicing with that, you know, as a Zen practitioner?
Well, the most important aspect of practice with the cancer, just as it is for daily life, is that it's a moment-by-moment thing.
Hmm.
In other words, I try to stay as present as possible in each moment, whether it's a moment I want to be having or not. And that's opened up a lot of opportunity for me to practice with new situations.
Mm.
That's kind of the Zen practitioner aspect of it. And then I've been writing about my experience through the treatment as well. And that reporting out is, that's really all that I am able to do at this point in terms of teaching, is to let people know how my treatment is going.
Yeah, well, I have to say, as somebody who reads those reports, that I've really appreciated the teaching that you've done there. And if you don't mind, I'll read a little bit from something that you wrote. "I don't like the fight war on cancer vocabulary," you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
"After all, these are cells from the community of this body. My cells, in shorthand, acting out of confusion. I have some compassion for this, since I also often act out of confusion. This is how I see the surgery and chemo, not as a war, but as restoring order and minimizing harm in the community of my body." I really appreciated that way of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you could say a little bit about your relationship to the cancer itself.
Well, this is something I've really learned talking to the infusion nurses at the chemotherapy center. I was struck from the beginning that they seem to have a respect for the bone marrow, which produces blood cells, which is a very important piece of monitoring that you have to do with the chemotherapy. And they were very clear with me that there was nothing that I could do to change how the bone marrow functions, that it was going to need to find its own way. And they spoke of it almost as though it was a respected colleague that needed to figure out this current situation. And I really like that feeling of cooperation, collaboration with the different aspects of my body, and coming from that, how could I not include the cancer cells themselves as part of that whole picture? Because they are my own cells, and to treat them as kind of an enemy or an alien force is a little bit difficult. It's difficult to hold the process as completely as I wanted to.
Using
that fight language or war language.
Do you feel like that changes the way you're a patient?
Yes, in kind of an interesting way. I think, for one thing, feeling that all of these cells are participating in bringing the body back to harmony, I really have to pay attention. I can't say, well, I'm going to pay attention to these cells and not these cells. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to beat up on these cells. And so it's led me to be more open and aware of what is going on in a very subtle way in my body, to really pay attention to how the chemotherapy has been affecting me.
Yeah.
And so far it's had a pretty good outcome, in that I've been able to tolerate the chemotherapy better than most. That's what I'm told. And I'm convinced that including my whole body in that process has been part of that.
How has your training in the Tibetan tradition affected this part of your journey?
Well, there's a part of training in the Tibetan traditions called Lojong, or mind training, where you spend a great deal of time analyzing your response to adverse situations and trying to overcome our usual selfish ways of responding to situations. And to do that Lojong mind training helps a great deal in examining your response and reaction to situations, particularly ones that are not pleasant, and learning how to take the energy in those reactions and turn it to a more positive direction. I've found that particular aspect of the Tibetan tradition very, very helpful to me.
Hmm.
It's not something that we examine so formally in Zen.
Mm-hmm. Genko, you let me know that you've been reading the book The Five Invitations by Frank Ostasevsky. The subtitle of the book is Discovering What Death Can Teach Us About Living Fully. I thought I might ask you to talk a little bit about each of those five invitations that are in the book and how you've been practicing with them at this time.
Oh, that's a big question. These five invitations are, what he's saying is that these invitations are things that we're somewhat faced with when we're faced with our own mortality up close, but that they are valuable at any point during in our lives to work in this way. The first one is don't wait. Don't think your life is going to get better or different later on. Don't wait for it to be a better life. Welcome everything. Push away nothing. And this is about our wanting to pick and choose the experiences that we have. You know, I like this kind of a life, not that kind of a life. Well, guess what? You get given what you're given. The third invitation is bring your whole self to the experience. We tend to try to bring our best self to an experience, you know, the good side. But if we bring everything about ourselves to the experience, we're going to actually learn a lot more about it. The fourth invitation is find a place of rest in the middle of things. That is honestly one of the hardest ones for me, because my response to difficulty is to try to fix it, get busy, make something happen, and to just calm down and sit with what's going on is really a difficult practice for me. And then the fifth one is cultivate don't know mind. Don't know mind is a meaning I don't have any foregone conclusions about how this is going to come out. I don't have any expectations of how it's going to come out. I'm going to approach this situation with curiosity rather than the fix-it mentality that I tend to use. So those are the five invitations.
That fifth one I imagine, must be hard when you really don't know what the outcome will be and where you may be afraid of the outcome.
Yes.
Do you find you have to work with fear?
Yeah. Right. Fear was absolutely the first thing that came to me when I got the diagnosis is no,
yeah.
That can't be. No. And it was very much infused with fear. But then recognizing, okay, that's fear talking. Let's just explore it a bit.
Hmm. Is that the way you've dealt with fear, is to kind of be interested in exploring it?
I would say initially what I have to do is simply sit still with it and recognize it as fear. And then rather than going into fix-it mode, to go into curiosity mode. And that's where don't know mind comes in, of going, okay, well, what exactly is this? You know, what can I find out? Rather than spinning off from the fear into a story about, oh, this is a disaster, you know, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. Well, I don't have any of that information for sure. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's fear is such a remarkable teacher, I think, for us. Genko, I thought I might ask you to conclude by reading a poem that one of our peer group members wrote for you, Anita Feng. Would you mind doing
yes.
that?
This is a beautiful poem and really ties a lot of this together. May you be well in this next breath. May you find a certain kind of joy at every bend in this unknown, merciless road, knowing that you are emissary of the cosmos and agent of incomparable change. And when it happens that you are not well for a time, now is still your time. In the midst of this crazy, unbridled love and chaos, may you find shelter where the breath begins again. May you flower endlessly into a bright awakening for all.
That's beautiful. Well, Genko, thanks so much for coming in. I really appreciate you doing that, and I appreciate this chance that I've had to be with you on this journey.
Thank you so much, and I certainly appreciate your support.
Yep. Take care. Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Crossing. For more information about the Puget Sound Zen Center, go to pszc.org.